You see, these are my affiliations there. I'm the head of the psychosomatic department in the clinic SKM in Langenthal. I'm trained for internal medicine and cardiology. Beside that, I'm a lecturer for psychosocial medicine here at the University of Bern. And in addition, you realize that I'm something like the director of this Research Institute for Spirituality and Health, also organizing this company, this conference. This is the clinic in Langenthal. You are all warmly welcome to visit us, and everybody who is visiting us will get a coffee. This is a little bit the cardiovascular part of the clinic. This is my favorite area. I'm doing basic diagnostics and treating mainly cardiovascular outpatients, and I will tell you some of that in my lecture now. And this, what you see here, is our whole person or holistic concept. We really try to realize in all the disciplines we are working in. This is a coronary patient. This is a chronic obstructive lung patient, and this is a blood pressure patient. Oh, okay. Blood pressure patient here. I'm doing also reactivity testing. I will tell you more about this later. So this about. I would like to give you some kind of outline for my lecture, and we'll see how we do with the time. Maybe I have to jump over some parts. I would like to give you an introduction first, and then some overview on the epidemiology of cardiovascular diseases. Then I would like to enter on mechanisms, mainly risk factors. Cardiovascular reactivity is a very important concept in cardiovascular medicine. I would like to present you two studies we did ourselves in the clinic. And then I would say something about coping with heart disease. This is a topic in itself. I really can't cover that. And finally, I will try to summarize the consequences for cardiac care. So you see these numbers here. I learned that from Raphael Bonelli. I know whether he's here. So you can see where we are. So if we are approaching 6, then we are getting to the end. So cardiovascular medicine and spirituality, we could ask ourselves whether the heart is something like a spiritual organ. I think the heart is really some kind of special organ. We already hear that the heart is quite central also in the body and also in our personality. We have only one heart. If it stops, then it might be the end. So the heart is somehow special, and also in the religious literature, the heart has a very central role or position, or is a metaphor for religious aspects. And you find that also in the religious literature, for example, in the Old Testament. I quote you, you see it in Proverbs, for example, you have all these nice verses about the heart. Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. A heart at peace gives life to the body. This is very interesting. A heart of peace gives life to the body, but envy roots the bones. And finally, a cheerful heart is good medicine. A cheerful heart is good medicine. It's very true. We know that today, depression, for example, is a risk factor for a cardiovascular disease. A cheerful heart is good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones. And also later on in the history, the heart played quite a central role. Also for Pascal, the famous mathematician, he said, "Le cœur a ses raisons que la raison ne connaît pas." So the heart has some kind of deeper knowledge, maybe the mind, or the ratio doesn't have. This is one of my heart patients. I quickly would like to present him to you. He's a patient with coronary artery disease, ischemic heart disease. And he came to the clinic with severe dyspnea and all these symptoms. And what was interesting for me, he had no of the classical risk factors. He was not he didn't have any family history. He didn't smoke. He didn't have hypercholesterolemia. He didn't have diabetes. He had no hypertension. The only thing he had was fear. He was a very fearful person, and maybe for all his life he was having these kind of fears. And this man, probably was one of the factors producing coronary artery disease in him. And it's fascinating for me to see how medicine and also cardiology is developing. This is something like the Bible of cardiovascular diseases, the textbook of Braunwald. And in the edition of 1980, there was a whole chapter on emotion, psychiatric disorders, and the heart. Later on, they took it out again, so it's going forth and back. But in the 1998 edition, they had this chapter on emotion, psychiatric disorders, and the heart. And what you read here is substantial evidence exists to indicate association between psychosocial stresses and coronary artery disease, hypertension, arrhythmia, and sudden death. Substantial evidence that there is a link between psychosocial factors and heart disease. And you see it down here. This is very fascinating. I don't know whether you can see this diagram here. You see, if somebody is getting a heart attack, what is emotionally happening? Anxiety is going up, going down later. Denial is coming up, going down. Depression is coming up a little bit later. And they speak of chronic traits can play a role too. So cardiovascular medicine and spirituality, I think there's quite an evolution in this area. Medicine started off with biomedical model, heart as a pump, as a hydraulic system. Then the psychosocial model came up with the emotional influences, stress, physiology. And I think it's more and more extending also to include spiritual aspects, like something like an extended biopsychosocial model. I like this term because it leaves it open more. So in medicine, we are getting more holistic view of the field, and also in cardiovascular medicine. Epidemiology. The strongest factor in medicine is mortality. You know, if you can influence mortality, then you have then your treatment is powerful. And there's a nice study on religiosity, spirituality, and mortality. It's a meta-analysis by Chida and Stepdoe, and two very renowned institutes, the Department of Epidemiology and Public Health in London and an institute in the United States. And Chida made this very beautiful meta-analysis I would like to present you here. And what you see here, they included 44 studies qualified for the meta-analysis. And you see that the overall benefit of religion and spirituality is 0.82. That means you have a 80% reduction of mortality in people who are more religious or more spiritual. I think this is quite amazing. This is the average of all the studies. And what you see here is that women benefit more. Women have a reduction of 0.7, so 30% reduction of mortality risk. Men have 0.87, so this 13%. And finally, down here, you see cardiovascular mortality. It goes down to 0.72. That means 28% reduction of cardiovascular mortality in more religious or more spiritual people. I think this is very, for me, this is very impressive. And it's also showing that cardiovascular medicine is really under the influence of psychosocial and maybe also spiritual factors. Another, an older study done in Israel with 10,000 Israel civil servants. They have been followed up over 20 years. You see this here, this is a Kaplan-Meier curve. This is, they have been followed up for 23 years about. And all the cardiovascular risk factors have been assessed. And in addition to that, they also assessed orthodoxy, from secular to most orthodox. And you see this, and what you see here in the curve is that the only one that differs are the most orthodox. So the most orthodox seem to have over time survival benefit of about 20% in relation to the others. There's no big difference among Orthodox, among the others, and from non-believers to Orthodox. But the most Orthodox, and I was surprised about that too, had a real significant survival benefit. And this has been controlled for all the other risk factors. So what is behind this? How can we understand this benefit from religiosity or spirituality on mortality, and especially on cardiovascular mortality? One aspect I think we can understand quite well, this is the religion, spirituality does moderate lifestyle and health behavior. We already hear that. And it's out of the handbook, of the new handbook here. You see that religious people smoke less. It's quite clear, 90% of the studies show this. Religious people have lower cholesterol, a little bit less clear, 52% of the studies show this. Religious people have better blood pressure, this is not so clear too, but it's 57%. And they exercise more, it's quite clear too. So these are the classical cardiovascular risk factors. I would like to show you some of the scientific evidence. I was amazed about this. This was an article in a German pharma journal, basically, in a pharma journal. They had an article on, this is German, does religion have an anti-hypertensive effect? No, it's actually was the wrong. Let me make this first. So this is cigarette smoking. Cigarette smoking is quite clear. You see, you have church attendance down here, and no attendance to weekly attendance. You see, it goes down step by step. So this is like a dose response curve, and you have the percent of smoking and the quantity of smoking, it's both the same. Let's go back to blood pressure. This is from the old handbook. You see there's already up to 2000, there were 30 studies on religion and blood pressure. And this is one of them. What did they do here? This is religious activity and diastolic blood pressure. And what you have here is religious attendance and the frequency of prayer and Bible reading. And if both is low, low attendance, low prayer and Bible reading, this is diastolic blood pressure is the highest. Then if attendance is high and prayer and Bible reading is lower, so it goes down. And the best condition is high attendance and high prayer and Bible reading. Prayer and Bible reading is private religious activity. And if you have both, then you have the best chance to have a good diastolic blood pressure. So it's also like some kind of dose-response relationship. But it's not so, to show you that it's not so easy always. There are other influences on that. And one is the race, for example. What you see here is the African Americans and the whites. And this is blood pressure too. This is diastolic blood pressure here. This is systolic blood pressure up there. And you have the black is the low religious coping, and the high is the high religious coping. What means religious coping here? They assess the following. I put my trust in God. I seek God's help. I try to find comfort in religion. And I pray more than usual. If you score high in these questions, then you have high religious coping. And what you see here is that the low religious coping, this is clinical blood pressure. This is awakening blood pressure, and this is 24 hours. You know, this is the sleep period, this is the day period, and this is the sleep period. And in all three, in all the different conditions, you see basically the same. In low religious coping, you have higher blood pressure than in high religious coping. And this is for systolic pressure as well as for diastolic blood pressure. But only in the African Americans. You don't see this here. There is no significance between the bars here. But it's there's no difference. It might be it might be the other way around even. So the race also is an important factor in the relationship. And this is another fascinating study from Italy. It shows the relationship between somehow lifestyle and blood pressure. They said they assessed nuns also for a prospective study over 20 years. And looked how their blood pressure is, what their blood pressure is doing. And what you see, the yellow ones are the nuns. And you see that in the nuns, the blood pressure stays quite stable over time, over the 20 years. And in the normal population, blood pressure goes up with age. So what does that say or mean? It says that this meditative life these nuns live in a secluded order also influences their blood pressure over time, and quite an impressive way. So they somehow stay young by getting older. Their blood pressure is staying younger. This is the cholesterol here. No difference. Huh? And this is a beautiful study of Paul Manaconda. He's with us. Maybe you can stand for a moment. So you also can contact him. He made two very nice studies on the blood pressure. This is one of them. And what you see here, he made some kind of religious intervention. You know, he did some kind of Christian meditation with these blood pressure people. And what you see here, you have here systolic and you have diastolic blood pressure. And you see here, this is the baseline and this is the follow-up. And you see in meditation, it goes down. Both systolic and diastolic. So this kind of religious intervention is improving blood pressure in this group of hypertensives. And there's another nice study on rosary prayer. It has been published in the British Medical Journal. And they also investigated nuns doing rosary prayer regularly in their daily life. And what you see here is that it's a regulating effect of rhythmic prayer on respiration, heart rate, blood pressure, and cerebral blood flow also. So these rhythmic prayers, this rosary prayer, seems to have some regulating effects on the cardiovascular system. So this can give us some ideas on how this, religion or religious activity or religious involvement could influence cardiovascular outcome. I would like to go on to the more psychosocial factors in cardiovascular medicine. This also from the handbook again. What you see here is that the religious people, they have less hostility. 66% of the studies show this. More optimism and hope, less anxiety, less depression, and better social support usually. So these are other factors from psychosocial medicine known influencing cardiovascular disease. This is a nice study, or at least a nice title of the study. A change of heart, cardiovascular correlates of forgiveness in response to interpersonal conflicts. They looked what is the effect of forgiveness on blood pressure. And the result you see here, trait forgiveness was associated with lower levels of blood pressure. State forgiveness was associated with lower level of blood pressure, heart rate, and rate pressure products. So forgiveness, I think, is also a specific aspect that could influence cardiovascular risk factor, mainly hostility, who is in psychosocial medicine a very central risk factor in cardiology. So forgiveness could have, or a forgiving attitude could have an influence on cardiovascular medicine too. So that's a diagram you already know from Harald Koenig. I think it's very helpful. You have religion here, and the religion can influence mental health, it can influence social support, it can influence health behavior. That's what we just saw from these studies. And by this, it can influence the stress axis, it can influence the immune system, it can influence autonomic nervous system, and it can influence health behaviors. And we know that all of this is important in heart disease. And so this can help us to somehow understand this relationship between religion, spirituality, and cardiovascular diseases. Maybe you have questions, then please ask or intervene. If not, I go on. I would like to introduce a little bit in this central concept of cardiovascular reactivity. Well, cardiovascular reactivity, it means that the cardiovascular response on mental, social, or physical stress or challenges. So how does, and this is an important marker of the health of the cardiovascular system. Typical measures are heart rate variability, maybe you heard of that, blood pressure variability, you also can assess blood pressure variability. Blood pressure blood pressure regulation is something very very complex and very fascinating, because blood pressure has to adapt to different situations from minute to minute, from second to second. And cardiac output or pre-ejection period are other markers in cardiovascular reactivity. And this is a central concept in psychosocial. It's a psychosocial risk factor for cardiovascular diseases. If somebody has high cardiovascular reactivity, he's more prone to develop hypertension, to develop coronary artery disease or other cardiovascular diseases. And there are huge individual differences in cardiovascular reactivity determined by quite a complex system regulation. I show you this here. This is Lavallo, who dealt with that a lot. And he defined three levels of regulation in cardiovascular reactivity. So you have this frontal limbic system, you have the hypothalamic system, like these regulatory centers there, and you have the peripheral organs also having different sensitivities responses and sensitivities to the hormones and the autonomic nervous system. So we can understand that religiosity also could influence the reactivity, cardiovascular reactivity, on maybe different levels. And this is a nice study from Kevin Masters from the United States I would like to present to you. He investigated two groups of people. He investigated young people and older people. The young were around 20, the older around 60. And he assessed religiosity, intrinsic religiosity, or extrinsic religiosity. And also he assessed cardiovascular reactivity. He stressed them with a stress test. And you see what happened here. You have systolic and diastolic blood pressure. And in the young, the diastolic blood pressure is going up and systolic blood pressure is going up. Either they are intrinsic either they are more intrinsic or more extrinsic religious. It's about the same. In the older people, in the intrinsic religious group, you have about the same as in the young. And in the extrinsic religious group, it's quite different. They have a high reactivity, mainly on systolic blood pressure, but also on diastolic blood pressure. So there seems to be a difference over time again in how the cardiovascular system reacts on a stressor. So this, the intrinsic one, also like the nuns, seem to stay somehow younger in their reactivity profile. I think this is very fascinating. And we wondered whether we could reproduce that in our patients in Langenthal. These were two psychology students. They made their master thesis. And they investigated 40 patients with mild to severe depression. They assessed medical history, medications, then back depression inventory, symptom checklist, the Huber scale here, centrality and emotions toward God, and R-COPE. And then they made a mental stress test, this Kolles-Troup test. I don't know whether you know this Kolles-Troup test. It's a very simple test. I show you. That's what you see here. You can do it either on a paper or you can do it on the screen. And you have these color words here. And there's a discordance between the word and the color. And your task is not to say the word, but the color, and it goes quickly. So you can try that now. You can try that now. Try to say the word, try to say the color and not the word. Try to say the color and not the word. So this is quite tricky, you know. This somehow stresses our brain because there is this discordant between... We read very quickly. We read quicker than so if we read blue, but if it's not blue, we would like to say blue. But if... So this is... No German. Okay. This. Yeah, I didn't think of that. I'm sorry. I didn't think of that. Yeah. So you wouldn't be stressed by that. Okay, that's the Huber scale. It's basically assessing these five dimensions of Glock in the centrality scale: cognitive interest, religious ideology, prayer as a religious experience, and church attendance as a practice of religion. And in our sample, we had about half quite high religious and half intermediate religious people. And you see that there's quite a correspondence between centrality scale and religious coping. This is our cope here. There's 0.47 correlation between religious centrality and religious coping. And here you see the blood pressure, the systolic blood pressure, and diastolic blood pressure, and they were well distributed according to the Gauss curve. And you see that the stress test works, not in the Malta people, but in the other, it works. So you have systolic blood pressure, it goes up about 15 millimeter mercury, only by this simple stress test. And you see, we did it twice. Baseline, Stroop, baseline, Stroop, baseline. The same with diastolic blood pressure, and you see it works well. And then we correlated centrality and religiosity with reactivity. That means the difference between baseline and Stroop. And I was quite surprised. We had quite a high correlation of minus 0.46 between religiosity and blood pressure reactivity. And you see it's negative. That means the higher the religiosity, the lower the reactivity. We also did a regression analysis, and we saw that about religious religiosity is explaining about 20% of the variance. And if you also take the BDI into account, then it's still about it's wrong. Age, sex, and BDI account for less than 10% of the variance. And we did a second study of that. This is a doctoral thesis with 32 healthy young adults, male and female. These are now healthy young adults, not the depressed patients, but healthy young adults. And we assessed again BDI, symptom checklist, anger scale in this healthy population, centrality scale, emotions towards God. And then we made a stress protocol with three stress tests. This is the Kohler Stroop again. This is continuous blood pressure recording here. This is quite sophisticated, but there are nice machines you can do that. You can make non-invasive continuous blood pressure recording, beat by beat. And this was baseline, this was Stroop, back to baseline, and here you see the Trier social stress test. This is really powerful. I don't know whether you know Trier social stress test. You have to either to do an interview or to do a presentation in front of a public. And then at the end, you also made tilt as a physiological stress test. And what we saw in this small study, we looked at recovery. You know, blood pressure is going up, and it goes up and it goes down again. But how it goes down and how quickly it goes down, this is different on how the cardiovascular system is working. And what you see here, this is a Stroop test again, and you see it goes down. you have the same differences in blood pressure. You have -10 or -15 millimeter mercury. And in Stroop test, there was no difference, no significant difference between the intermediate religious and the high religious. But in Trier's social stress test, there was quite a significant difference between the intermediate religious and the higher religious. In that way, the higher religious recover much better and much quicker than the lower religious. So this is another sign, it's even more powerful information about the cardiovascular system. As quicker it goes down to the baseline, as healthier you are. And also in the study of Paul Manikanda, he found the same in this meditation study. He did also a stress test here, and the meditation group here had lower reactivity than the control. And so probably by this kind of training, but also if you exercise regularly, if you maybe do meditation, you can influence reactivity and you can improve the function of the cardiovascular system. And it was only true here, it was only true for the systolic blood pressure, not for the diastolic blood pressure. I think this is very interesting. I cannot really interpret that. Okay, these were some part about the cardiovascular reactivity. Very short, I would like to say something about religious coping in heart disease. You all know Ken Pargament, I guess, and he really worked out this somehow positive or helpful functions of belief or of religion. And also Harold Koenig also showed us how important religious coping might be, mainly in severe disease states. Now this is the data from Duke. You see that 41% say that it's the most important factor. Even another 30% it's an important factor. And I really believe, and this is my experience, if we begin to make spiritual history in the patients, we will detect much more how they use some kind of spiritual or religious resources to cope with their diseases. I think if we don't make spiritual history, if we don't ask the patient, they will not tell us. And I think it's much more than we usually know about the patients. This again is another study. You see, this is heart surgery. Heart surgery is another important aspect in cardiovascular medicine, and it's quite challenging. It's quite challenging to go through heart surgery. And what you see here, this is the percent of death after heart surgery. And you see the same thing here. High religion, high social support, they had the lowest percentage of deaths. And low religious and low social support, they had the highest percentage. So I think it also influences heart surgery. It's an own small study I did in Austria. I think I jump over that. What I found interesting, this is Austrian population. I did ask them, how often are you attending religious services? One third said never. Another third once a year. About another third a month. And there's about 10% said weekly. But if you ask them, if I did ask them how important is religion for you, then it's another picture. So there's about 40% here who say quite important, and about 30% who said it's very important for me. So religious attendance for sure does not give us the whole picture. And I also asked them, did you pray for heart surgery? 50%, about 50% say no. And very few said, yes, I did regularly. And if I asked them, did you know of somebody who was praying for you for the heart surgery? And about 50, or more than 50% knew of somebody praying for them for their heart surgery. I find that interesting. Oh, sorry, I'll go back. Okay, what could be the consequences for care? I think we have to really to use a person-centered or patient-centered psychosocial approach in whatever we do in medicine. We have to take a spiritual history. I think this is really mandated. This is really important if you want to know about the spiritual aspects and about spiritual background of our patients. You have to assess spiritual needs and struggles. It will have a great effect if you start to support the patient's belief, and we also should where necessary refer people to pastoral or spiritual counselors. So I think this interdisciplinary spiritual care model is really what we need, and is really what in all the disciplines, and also in cardiology. So this is the book I already, which gives some ideas how to do that. This is again our patient we had at the beginning. I think he could really deal with his fears. He was religious, but he could somehow get better, cope better with his anxieties, and this helped him a lot to improve from his also from his cardiovascular disease. So I'm at the end. This is our institute. I think you don't want to say more about it. I would like to thank you for your attention.